There are voices still calling across the years, and they're all crying across the ocean, and they're crying across the land, and they will till we all come to understand. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us are chained. None of us are free. And there are people still in darkness, and they just can't see the light. If you don't say it's wrong, then that says it's right.
Uhuru, and welcome to this week's edition of Reparations in Action, the weekly program of the African People's Solidarity Committee here on Uhuru Radio, the online voice of the International African Revolution. As always, we want to thank the African People's Socialist Party for allowing us this hour each week to speak with you about the role and relationship and responsibility of Euro-Americans, North Americans, also known as white people, to take a stand in solidarity with the African liberation struggle. And so we are bringing you a program today, which is actually a replay of last week's program. We got a tremendous amount of requests to re-air the interview that was done with African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess with Cephas Johnson, who is the uncle of Oscar Grant, who was murdered by the Bay Area Rapid Transit cop, Meserly, who has just been released. And so we're going to bring that to you today, a replay of last week's program, and hope that you can learn from it. And we'll also be talking in the program about the Uhuru Summer Project coming up from July 9th through August 9th and why you should come to St. Petersburg and participate in that project. So here is African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess.
We have the honor of having with us Cephas Johnson, who is the uncle of Oscar Grant. So we're going to be summing up that case and other outrageous and very, very vicious cases of police murder and police brutality in the recent period. And then we're going to talk about why we need the Uhuru Freedom Summer Project this summer, and how and why Euro-Americans, white people, can and should be part of this historic meeting and event, summer project that's going to go on from July 9th to August 9th. So we're going to start with a clip of the murder of Oscar Grant.
They just wanted the videos. That's all they were concerned about.
Contact.
Yes.
Okay. All right, we're live on the air. We just played the clip of the video of the shooting, of the killing, the point-blank murder of Oscar Grant by Johannes Meserly on January 1st, 2009. And even though you couldn't see the video of it, you could hear the shot, you could hear the outrage and just the response from the hundreds of people who were witnessing that on the platform of BART at Fruitvale in Oakland, California on that night. So we just, you know, we're very honored to have Cephas Johnson, the uncle of Oscar Grant, who has become a powerful spokesperson for this case, and we're going to be able to talk to him today. I want to welcome Cephas Grant. Uhuru. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for being on the show.
And so we'd be correct. My name is Cephas Johnson.
Yes.
I'm Oscar Grant's uncle, and of course, public calls me Uncle Bobby.
Uncle Bobby, okay, and you are the uncle of Oscar Grant, and just, we're out here in St. Petersburg, Florida, but we know this case, I think the whole world knows about it, and the outrage of what just happened this past week with the release of Messerly, the killer cop in that case. I just want to sum up for our listeners that on Monday of this past week, the state of California released killer cop Johannes Messerly from the Los Angeles County Jail after serving only 11 months of a mere two-year sentence for the point-blank murder of 22-year-old Oscar Grant in Oakland, California on New Year's Day, 2009. Messerly shot Grant from only inches away as Grant lay handcuffed face down on the Bay Area Rapid Transit platform at the Fruitvale Station in Oakland. The execution of Grant, which was witnessed by many of his friends and hundreds of BART passengers, was caught on multiple cell phone and video cameras and uploaded to YouTube for the entire world to see. This time, the actions of the police that habitually murder young African men, often alone in the dark, was exposed to all. That is the only thing that differentiated the murder of Oscar Grant from thousands of other murders of African people by police in this ongoing war against the African community every day. It is an outrage that Messerly was given just a tiny slap on the wrist. Uncle Bob, or Cephas Johnson, just want to ask you, the release of Messerly was a slap in the face, not only of the family and friends of Oscar Grant, but for the whole community. Can you tell us more about this and just describe that release and what kind of protests went on and what kind of actions took place in response of that release?
Sure. Right before I start, I'd just like to say Happy Father's Day to all the fathers that are out there listening. You know, and just say, Tatiana, I know, wish she could say Happy Father's Day to her father, who her father, of course, we know, life was taken by the hands of a rogue police officer. You know, but to talk about what occurred on that platform in the way that it did was what we experienced was extreme, and I have to say racism, mm-hmm. as well as brutality and police misconduct. As we know, Tony Peroni, who was initially up on that platform that started the chaos, used racial epithets over and over repeatedly before Oscar was murdered. Before Oscar was murdered, the whole left side of his face was fractured. He was brutalized before he was murdered. You know, we need to remember these things. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we do know that Johannes Messerly, the one that actually shot Oscar and then claimed he mistaken his taser for his gun, had pulled his taser out twice up on that platform. Not only that, he punched Jackie Bryson, who was in handcuffs. I mean, we're talking about a young man in handcuffs he punched. When he hit that platform, he barked and yelled command. So, and then his history in itself speaks loudly to the fact that he came up there with a stereotypical belief that young African-American men have guns. And because of that, he took his own initiative to pull his gun and then claim it was a taser and shoot Oscar in the back. And as far as I'm concerned, it was like a badge of honor he was wearing when he did it, because he did not say he thought Oscar was reaching, he thought he was reaching for his taser.
Mm-hmm.
But what he did say was that he thought Oscar had a gun. I mean, the same claim that all these officers across the country claim, and they get away with it.
Yes.
So for that, if I can add, it was the first time in California state history that an officer was charged for murder. It was the first time in California state history that an officer was convicted of murder. And though we got a conviction, we need to remember that we were robbed of our conviction. The jury came back guilty on involuntary manslaughter, though we didn't accept that or want that. But the jury also came back with a guilty on the gun enhancement. The gun enhancement was the meat of our sentencing. We knew that was a victory and that this officer would be going to prison. But, of course, Judge Robert Perry, a judicial figure, decided that he did not want to send this cop to prison and decided to overturn the jury conviction on the gun enhancement and thereby then alleged that he himself, a judicial figure, made a mistake in the instructions given to the jury. Well, our question was, well, we sat in court for 2 years that a cop claimed he had made a mistake. Now we're sitting in a courtroom where a judge claims he made a mistake, and thereby that judge's decision reduced it down to 2 years, and then he says, I'm going to give him good time served, 1 day for each time incarcerated, which reduces time to just a little less than 11 months, a little less than 11 months. So here we have an officer who gets out of prison, or out of jail, because he never went to prison.
Right.
And then walks as if it never occurred. And the other attack that we suffered as a family was that Victims' Bill of Rights. Victims' Bill of Rights states that we are entitled to know his whereabouts, any parole hearing he goes before, any hearing date that he has, anything that pertains to release date, release time. And again, this criminal, this racist criminal justice system denied us the right to even have that information. So, you know, it's important for us to recognize just how heinous and egregious this criminal racist system has become. It denied us the right to get a fair trial with Mesley claiming he mistaked his gun for the taser. We were denied our right to get a fair verdict because the judge overturned the verdict that the jury came back. And then we were denied our right to speak at the last hearing of his release prior to release.
Thank you for that summation. That was powerful. It is such an outrage. I just want to say to everybody who just tuned in that we're speaking with Cephas Johnson, known as Uncle Bobby, the uncle of Oscar Grant, and he's just summing up what actually happened that night on January 1st, 2009, in the vicious, just point-blank execution of 22-year-old Oscar Grant.
And what happened in the sentencing? You know, the thing that they have the mandatory minimums, they have all of these harsh sentencing guidelines that target African people, but when it comes to a cop, they do what, you know, when it comes to the state, they're going to release him on no jail time in defiance of their own sentencing rules.
That's right.
Correct.
Go ahead.
Yes, I was going to say. Okay, what I was going to say was, I'm sorry, I heard an echo. But what really disturbed us too was that the defense for Mesley attorney filed an appeal for the involuntary manslaughter. So that is still in litigation.
Mm-hmm.
But when the judge decided to throw out our gun enhancement, we asked for an appeal on that. On that issue, you know, why can't we have an appeal on the fact that since you erred in your instructions to the jury, you claim, retry that aspect of the verdict. And, of course, the district attorney's office, Alameda County, claimed that they don't have any money. You know, so here, again, the total injustice, because the judge, the judicial figure, claimed he erred in his instruction to the jury, and we have no recourse. We have no recourse but to sit and take this as a major slap in the face, and then they ask us to go on with our lives as if it never happened. You know, we can't go on with our lives. We have We have a mother who lost a son that she loved dearly. You know, we have a daughter, again, who has lost a father who she can't even say Happy Father's Day to today, that she loved dearly. You know, we have many extended family members, as well as myself as an uncle, who loved Oscar.
Yes.
And yet we was robbed of our relationship, our love for, you know, him dearly. And so we pain, we ache, we anger, and we see this as a total outrage to this criminal justice system to have done us this way. But, you know, I need to be clear. You know, this has been going on for years with us as African Americans in this community, in our community. And that the reason why it's been so nationally known because of Oscar is because of the video cameras.
Yes.
You know, but yet we have many states now outlawing the right for you to videotape police officers in their role.
Yes.
You know, they're trying to silence us. And so we cannot let this pass without speaking to the utmost to it. You know, it's time for us, especially fathers, uncles, brothers, men, to stand and speak to this issue, that we are not going to continue to allow our children to be murdered in these streets by rogue police officers, and that we're going to speak to this issue, and we're going to demand, not only demand, but we're going to change policies within the Policeman's Bill of Rights, and we're going to change issues concerning how policemen are racially profiling our young men. Police biasing, all that's going to be addressed. But it's going to take us as men to stand, to speak, and to make sure that this never happens again. And if we can't stop it from ever happening again, those that do it be held accountable for the wrongs they commit in our community.
What I appreciate about what you're saying is just the struggle to not let this die and to not let Oscar Grant die in vain. And to, you know, to recognize that this is happening all over the country, all over the U.S. In fact, I've read that more people, and their majority black men, African men, and Mexican men, who have been killed by the police than soldiers have been killed in Afghanistan, you know, in that same period of time. U.S. soldiers. It's just, it's a war against the African community to, you know, Jim Crow justice. That's what we see, and that has to be. I'm part of the Solidarity Committee of the Uhuru Movement. We work in the white communities to win and educate other white peoples that this war is going on against the African community every day. And this is such an outrage when we look at what happened with Meserly versus what so many young men who are put three strikes, you're out, mandatory minimum, put in 30 years to life for some little thing because they're poor, because they don't have lawyers. If they'd been white, they wouldn't even have been arrested for what happened. And this is the two-tiered so-called justice system that exists in this country. And I feel that Oscar Grant is a symbol of that. And I just, you know, really appreciate hearing you speak here, and I've heard you speak at other events when I've been out in Oakland, and I know that the city of Oakland, so many people love and uphold and want to fight for Oscar Grant and what he represents, and I think that's a lot because of the work that you've done. Just in terms of the case going on now, do you see the struggle to continue? Do you see more demonstrations, more actions that the committee will be taking?
Yes, Penny. I mean, it's not over. Yet we still have, of course, the Department of Justice, who has been investigating now for approximately a year. But our demand, our call to action now is for all men and people who speaks to this injustice that we all witness, contact the Department of Justice, Eric Holder, as well as Tom Perez. Tom Perez is over the Civil Rights Division. Eric Holder, of course, is over the Department of Justice. We need letters to be sent to them by our communities expressing the outrage and the injustice of what they saw and how this sentencing process went. And with that expression from the community, it raises the stake for us to know that they will file a charges mm-hmm. against Johannes Mezley as well as Tony Peroni for civil rights violation. This is not over. It's long from being over, and that as long as we all act and do what we're supposed to do in our part, we will get justice. In addition to that, we are having an event on July 8th. July 8th is verdict day. Last year, 2010, was the actual date that the verdict came down. We had a verdict, as I had said earlier, of guilty on involuntary manslaughter, guilty on the gun enhancement. The time for the involuntary manslaughter was 2, 3, or 4 years. And the time for the gun enhancement was 3, 4, or 10 years. At the minimum, he should have gotten was 5 years. At the max, based on those charges, would have been 14 years. So we knew, without a doubt, that he had some prison time coming. And again, the judge took it off the table. So we ask that the community across the United States speak on that day, have rallies. It's not important how big they have to be, mm-hmm. but that the fact is that rallies are taking place in respect to verdict day. We're planning and having and will be having a big rally on July 8th in regards to verdict day. You know, that was significant, that was important, that was a victory, and we have been robbed of that victory.
Yes. Do you have a venue for that? Do you have a place that an address that you could put out?
No, right now this week we will actually have the address, but it more than likely will be in front of the Department of Justice, and I'm pretty much saying that with a surety. In Oakland, downtown Oakland, mm-hmm. in front of the Department of Justice, but anywhere across the United States, if
yes.
people can go to the Department of Justice and speak to that issue of what they witnessed according to what happened on that platform, and that they are demanding that the Department of Justice file charges, across the nation would be significant. But for us here locally in Northern California, of course, Oakland, we will be meeting in front of the Department of Justice. The time actually will go out very soon, which is this week. So I'm prematurely just giving this out because this mm-hmm. is an opportunity. I don't know if it would be on the radio today, but since I am,
yes.
And given this opportunity, I'm making this known now that on July 8th, again, maybe 12, 1 o'clock, I'm not certain of the time, but it will be out there that we will be meeting in front of the Department of Justice building here in Oakland, California.
And do you have a website that people can check on for updates?
Yes. You can go to the official Oscar Grant page, which is on Facebook. We have information and events there.
Okay.
The official Oscar Grant page, and then also you can go to the website
oscargrantfoundation.com or the Oscar Grant page on Facebook, and people
can stay
up to date with what is happening with the friends and family and the committee to defend Oscar Grant. And I unite that all around the country there should be rallies and everybody should uphold this verdict and remember Oscar Grant on July 8th. And that actually coincides with the summer project that the Uhuru Movement and the African People's Socialist Party is holding here in St. Petersburg around that time, fighting for the democratic rights of the African community and end to this war against the black community that we see going on. So, Uncle Bobby, or Cephas Johnson, the uncle of Oscar Grant, give us some last words to the people who are listening today.
Well, of course, my last words would be that stand and let's fight for our rights and our justice that we so deserve in this so-called USA. That has been denying us for years.
Yes.
You know, It is my hope that we as a people take this opportunity that Oscar has presented to us by allowing us to see just how heinous and egregious this police brutality that we're experiencing in our community has been seen. We
yes.
have seen it. There's no doubt that it is happening behind closed doors in the late hours of night, during the dark hours,
yes.
where no one else knows but that individual that had to suffer and die at the hands of these racist, rogue police officers. So here we have Oscar dying on that platform. Let him become a martyr. He wasn't murdered, but he was martyred. He was martyred
yes.
to give us the consciousness and the awakening of what we need to do as a community. And if I can close with this, after Mesley had shot him in the back, Oscar turned and looked at him and said, "You shot me. You shot me twice." Mm. Go to the video and see and hear.
Yes.
And yet, this officer did not acknowledge or apologize or say anything or do anything in any regards to him being sorry for what he did. This was an intentional act. He immediately put his knee in the back of Oscar where the bullet hole was at, turned him over, picked him up, felt the smoke and blood to come from his chest where Jackie Bryson now suffers from vision, seeing his best friend murdered in his face.
Yes.
So please, everyone, for Tatiana, his daughter, to see in the future that her father didn't just die and be murdered, but he rose the consciousness of our people to stand for true fatherhood, for justice that we deserve in this community.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for coming on this Father's Day, and really appreciate your bringing the question of Father's Day to Oscar Grant and to all the young men who have been shot down in this country in this brutal war that's going on that nobody ever wants to talk about, undeclared war going on right here in the U.S. And I just want to thank you so much, Cephas Johnson, Uncle Bobby, uncle of Oscar Grant. Thank you for being on the show, and I hope we can have you on again.
Thank
Uhuru.
You, too.
And
yes. Bye.
Uhuru. So that was a really powerful interview conducted by African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess with Cephas Johnson, uncle of Oscar Grant, who was shot down in the subway in Oakland, California by the police, and after the police was convicted, he was let off with no jail time at all. And so that was a really powerful interview. And we just want to let people know about some important events coming up. If you want to get involved and if you want to take a stand against that kind of violence, that kind of brutality being carried out by the U.S. government against the African population, against the African community, we encourage you to come out and participate in numerous events that are taking place around the country. Today, which is Father's Day, and as Cephas Johnson so poignantly stated, you know, Tatiana, the young child, was denied a future with her father, Oscar Grant, by the violence of the state against the African community. Today is Father's Day, and in Houston, Texas, from noon, so it's already gotten going now and going on until 8 o'clock, they're having a Juneteenth event, and it's called Juneteenth, Not Yet Uhuru. Of course, Uhuru means freedom, and this is taking place at the AFDEP 5th Ward Community Garden at 3707 Brill Street in Houston. It's going to be a fantastic program and music festival with vendors, and encourage you, if you're in Houston, to go out to 3707 Brill Street to the Juneteenth Not Yet Uhuru Festival. If you're in the St. Petersburg or Florida area, at 4 p.m., there's going to be a special Father's Day program at the Uhuru House at 1245 18th Avenue South in St. Petersburg, with culture and a tribute to African fathers. So encourage you to come out and attend that. And then coming up, as Chairwoman Hess mentioned,
beginning on July 9th through August 9th is going to be the Uhuru Summer Project, and we're seeing a lot of attention paid now to the Freedom Riders with a new movie having come out talking about how people from all throughout the North came down to the South to support the black struggle, support the struggle for civil rights for the African community and democratic rights for the African community, and it's still going on. It's not been achieved, not yet Uhuru, and that struggle continues. And so the Uhuru movement is organizing and hosting a summer project beginning on July 9th, and I know we're going to talk more about that. So wherever you are, you want to get involved in the struggle, you want to learn from Chairman O'Malley, learn from the leaders of the Uhuru movement, we encourage you to come down and participate in that. So Uhuru, Penny.
Uhuru, Sandy. Well, that was such a powerful interview with the uncle of Oscar Grant, and it is so deeply moving and just disturbing in just the deepest way to hear the families of the victims of the U.S. war against the African community that's going on right here. It's even though I've heard Mr. Johnson speak on other occasions and other friends, I've heard Jack Bryson, who he referred to his sons were Oscar's best friends who were on the platform with him that night, right there when, if you see the videos, they were just inches away from him as he was point-blank murdered by Johannes Meserle. It's just always, always really powerful to hear the family speak and to see how much they are struggling, and their acknowledgement that it's not just against one person, it's not just against their family member, but this is happening all over the U.S., throughout Oakland and, of course, New York, Philadelphia, Miami, that we're going to talk about in just a minute. And I think that for us as the white community, as the Euro-Americans, as the people who have benefited from this system built on the enslavement of African people and the genocide against the indigenous people and U.S. wars of plunder and occupation that we see just proliferating around the world under the Obama administration right now, it's like you have to wake up every day and see, where's the war today? Where's the new war today? But you see the resistance going on. Oh, my gosh. I mean, we are just, and this is why these struggles are going on, because people are fighting against a parasitic system that is just built on slaughter, built to kill, to rape, to torture, to maim, and suppress and repress peoples around the world and steal their resources so that we could just live this pleasant little life with the option, if we want, to keep our head in the sand and not know anything about what's happening, even a few blocks from where we might live. And I just feel that we have a responsibility as the white community to look around us. This world is coming down. Just the other day, I had a chance to look at videos of the struggle in Yemen from Yemen TV or some professional video. I don't think it was Al Jazeera, but it was something. I mean, that was probably 2 million people out on those streets. It was incredible. They were chanting. I don't know, it was in Arabic. It was probably down with U.S. imperialism. I have no idea exactly what the chants are. But you could see with the chants, everybody raising their fists. And it was like, it was so many millions of people. It was like a living organism that would put up these fists together in unison. It was just amazing to see. This is what the resistance looks like. We don't get to see it unless you search it out on the internet. But it is going on in numbers of people that you cannot fathom, not just Egypt. The people of Libya are fighting against the U.S. invasion that's going on right now. Tunisia, Morocco, all around the Middle East, and huge struggles going on inside of Europe as well. And, people want U.S. imperialism off their backs. We're facing a crisis of imperialism like we have never seen before. Those of us who have been through the 60s and everything else and seen struggle, that was, as the chairman says, the dress rehearsal. I mean, you can see articles today in the New York Times, in the Wall Street Journals that say, fasten your seatbelt, we're in for a bumpy ride. And when they say that, you know they're the masters of understatement, because this is the earthquake of a parasitic system coming down. And this war against the African community is intensifying. Miami is just the killing ground right now, a slaughterhouse of police killings against the African community. And we're going to hear a clip. You won't be able to see it, but you can hear the shots. It sounds like, where are we? Where are we? Libya, Afghanistan, when you hear this. So let's listen to this, and we're going to sum up the police killings on Memorial Day of this year against African people in Miami, Florida.
You're about to witness what appears to be a chaotic shooting scene in South Miami Beach. At just before 4 o'clock a.m. on Memorial Day, a car driven by a suspect comes to an abrupt stop on Collins Avenue. This video, posted on YouTube, apparently shows police surrounding the car and then firing. Police kill the suspect, Raymond Harris. Miami Beach police tell CNN Harris had used his vehicle as a weapon that morning, that he'd struck and injured an officer with his car when the officer tried to stop him. But an eyewitness says police used intimidation to cover up their actions. Here you see video from that eyewitness from street level.
Oh my God, he got to be dead now.
Then watch how police approach that eyewitness. One appears to have a gun drawn.
We have that eyewitness and his girlfriend who was...
appeared to have a gun drawn. Indeed they did. And we do want to open up to listeners. If you have a comment or a question that you want to raise on this topic, feel free to call in live to the show at 727-565-1599. That's if you're in the U.S., 727-565-1599. If you're in the U.K., that's country code 440208. 1336629. You can also call us if you're on your computer and you're using Skype. You can, the Skype ID here is Uhuru Radio, all one word. Or you can email us at dj@uhururadio.com. So that was a powerful video that a bystander captured of the brutal military assault on a African in a vehicle in Miami.
Uhuru, and you know, this murder was very, very, very brutal, and I think seven other Africans were wounded in that assault, that volley of you know, automated rifle shots that was going out there. And this was during Urban Beach Week, which is when African college students converge on Miami Beach for fun and have a good time, and yet the war is always there.
Yeah.
Anytime Africans converge, I mean, can you imagine all the places where all the white college students go in Florida and other places? There's not this police armed military assault going on. You're not worried that your child, your college student, you know, teenager is going to be shot down in a volley of 100 shots by the police during some kind of thing that's a fun time that they may be having on spring break or other kind of festivals that are going on that are mostly in the white community.
Right.
I want to read a little bit from an article from a website called Axis of Logic. And its title is, "In Miami, 12 officers shoot Haitian," and of course the Uhuru movement would say African from Haiti, "over 100 times. Where is the international press?" And we would add, where's the anti-war movement? Where are the people who stand against the violence that the U.S. is carrying out all around the world? Although that is a very weak, very weak movement.
There's a Republican in office.
Yes. But we don't see anything, not one word of this kind of violence against the African community. And this article says, 22-year-old Raymond Harris shot to death while sitting in his car by Miami police on May 31st during Urban Beach Week. Police say that they found a gun in his car after they killed him, and they make vague references to unnamed witnesses who said that Raymond was shooting at the cops. The remaining question is why the police tried to destroy videotaped evidence. Well, I mean, first of all, we heard the shots. The shots came from the police. Nobody else was shooting. It's a typical kind of thing that the police use to justify this slaughter of young African men predominantly that's coming down, but not always, because we're going to talk about other age groups who have been victimized by the police and the African community. But they always plant a gun or say they found a gun. Most of the time these are toy guns, fake guns. And, you know, this happens over and over again. And again, the situation with Oscar Grant is unique because it was videoed. And as Oscar Grant's uncle stated, the police are making it illegal to video while they're doing anything. So it's, you know, it's just outrageous. And this is why there has to be a movement. This is what the Uhuru movement is about, struggling to push back this counterinsurgency, this police containment and war against the African community. And for us as white people, our interest, if we're looking for a future, is to join in that struggle, to join in solidarity and be working in the white community to build support for this movement, to push back this state attack against the African population, and to work for reparations, the return of stolen resources to African people. So this article states, in the meantime, the big, quote-unquote, press agencies maintain an alarming silence around this scandalous event, demonstrating that in the country that continuously accuses the nations it attacks of violating human rights, skin color alone justifies a death sentence. Not one word has yet been published by the international press agencies, which are so prone to broadcasting the minor incidents that happen in countries who confront the American imperial power, about the execution in Miami of a 22-year-old African from Haiti by 12 police officers who fired on him 100 times while he was in an unarmed in his car. In Miami itself, the local press, characterized by its blind cooperation with calls from law enforcement, has diverted public attention with a controversy over a cell phone whose owner was filming the savage police intervention that ended with the death of young Raymond Arise. Apparently, the murder of this son of a humble Haitian immigrant doesn't interest anyone, including those holders of power in the city, with their persistent traits of racial hate and segregation. Criticized for confiscating and destroying cameras and mobile phones after killing Arise during the hip-hop festival, Urban Beach Week, the municipal authorities of Miami Beach questioned one witness testimony that said a police officer had aimed a gun at his head, handcuffed him, and destroyed his mobile phone by kicking it. The testimony confirms that the police detained a witness, an African, not because he was filming, but because he was, quote, very similar to the description of the suspect that was supposedly seen fleeing. This is a version of the story whose racist tones don't escape anyone. No report of the events in the local press mentions Arise's death nearly as much as they have, with the help of the police, been encouraged to describe a criminal with an emphasis that is more than suspicious. The court file resembles those of thousands of young African men in the city whose segregated neighborhoods are patrolled daily by SWAT teams with horrible reputations. A few days after Arise's death, the police announced that they, quote, found a gun, quote, hidden in the car, something very suspicious in a city where cases of planted guns have been cause for scandals in the past. Arise was shot after crashing his Hyundai into a police barricade. He then fled into the popular event that attracts thousands of hip-hop fans annually, most of whom are African. Six youths from segregated neighborhoods in Miami have become victims of fatal police shootings within the last 10 months. Six African young men killed by police in the last 10 months without even one investigation report having been filed, or one police officer accused even of criminal negligence. In the meantime, the big press agencies maintain an alarming silence about this scandalous event, demonstrating that in the country that continuously accuses nations at attacks of violating human rights, skin color alone justifies a death sentence. So that, you know, that is just incredibly outrageous to see that this is going on right here. And while that's going on, there's, I mean, you know, more police killings in Philadelphia. I don't know if people have seen the video that took place in Washington, D.C., where an African man in a wheelchair was attacked by the police as he was on the sidewalk. They pushed him over onto the ground out of his chair. You can see there's videos. People were videoing this as well. Blood just coming out of his face and his lips onto the ground. A pool of blood was collecting right there. People are gathering around, yelling at the police to stop attacking this man in a wheelchair. And yet, this is what happens. You know, this is what happens every day in this war against the African community. In fact, we have a couple more clips that we want to play as well.
Well, and I just also want to add, Penny, the instance in Miami where they later found a gun is reminiscent of what they did here in St. Petersburg with Javon Dawson, who after the police murdered him, then later, and left him lying there dying in the lawn, on the grass, and then later said that they found a gun near the body. But the only cop, even amongst the cops, the only one who testified that he saw Javon Dawson holding a gun was the cop who killed him. Every other witness said, no, he was not holding a gun. And yet a gun shows up later with no fingerprints, no powder burns, no nothing, you know, and nobody is charged.
It's, yeah, the same old story right here in St. Petersburg, in Oakland, in Philadelphia, everywhere. They produce, and it's usually a fake gun of some sort. Who has fake guns? I mean, only the police, you know, replicas of what a gun would actually be like. I mean, that's not something kids play with, a fake gun. So, you know, these are obviously manufactured simply for this purpose, as part of this war against the African community to criminalize an entire population that is the revolutionary population in this country that has stood up to shake this system to its very foundations. And this African community is rising up again, and we can be part of that. Let's listen to a couple more clips, and then we're going to come back and sum that up quickly and then talk about the upcoming summer project here in St. Pete.
So this is from Atlanta and then from Detroit.
Police are defending the shooting death of a 92-year-old woman. It happened as plainclothes officers burst into her home last night to serve a search warrant for drugs. The woman started shooting, wounding three officers. Police say they made an undercover drug buy at the house earlier in the day. The woman's niece said there were never drugs in the house, and her aunt lived alone and probably just panicked. The family's furious.
Yes, she has a gun, and I went and got her gun permit. Now, they didn't have to shoot that old lady down like a dog. They didn't have to do that. It's one old woman in that house. I've got burglar bars there to try to protect her. I've got mercury lights out there to keep it bright and light. I'm as mad as hell, and somebody's going to answer to that.
Neighbors and relatives say police must have had the wrong address or the wrong person. The officers' injuries were not life-threatening. The assistant police chief said the officers were justified in shooting back once they were fired upon.
All morning we've been following breaking news from Detroit's east side. A 7-year-old girl was accidentally shot and killed by Detroit police.
Fox News' Roop Raj has been on the scene with the family all morning.
We are coming to you from the 4,000 block of Lillibridge Street here on Detroit's east side. You can see the toys in the front yard of this home. This is where it all happened. The toys and actually the couch, the very couch that 7-year-old was killed on. We're talking about 7-year-old Ayanna Jones, an honor student, someone who loved her family, a loving girl, now gone. This happening about 12:30 in the morning. SWAT members coming into this home, apparently they say to serve a search warrant for a murder suspect. And when they came into the house, there was a lot of confusion, a flash bang thrown through the window.
the grandmother of that little girl, Ayanna Jones, also startled. Apparently, somehow the gun, according to Detroit police, went off. They're calling it an accident. The 7-year-old shot in the neck, the bullet then coming through her head, the couch now sitting on the front porch. Family members asking how this could happen.
I'm always going to remember it through her mother and her brothers. It's just sad to see such a waste for no reason. They're supposed to be trained for this type of stuff. They came in here and killed my baby. She was a good girl and everything. She didn't do nothing to no one. She was asleep. She don't even know what's going on. She didn't know what hit her. She don't even know.
Again, Detroit police calling this a terrible accident and one that they'll be speaking more about throughout the day. In fact, they are holding a news conference. Fox 2, of course, is there. We'll be there and bring you the very latest.
Uhuru, just wanted to play those two clips. Very, very moving, deeply just indicative of the violence against the African community. One of a murder by a SWAT team in Atlanta of 92-year-old Catherine Johnston a couple of years ago. The outrage from her family about that. And later, when the police had some kind of investigation on that, it turns out, oops, it was the wrong house. And of course,
that's what they said when they killed Marcel McCullough.
They always, oops, it comes out later. This is what they always do. What is the right house? There's no right house. This is a war against the African community. It's just like their search for Al-Qaeda or whatever. This is the enemy that they have planted in the African community as a means of destroying that community, murdering it, and imprisoning African men and women. And 7-year-old Ayanna Jones in Detroit, that was just incredibly, incredibly unsettling and difficult to even hear about. A 7-year-old child asleep on a couch, the police come in with a flashbang grenade. You know, again, indicative of a war. Why are you using grenades against the community, coming into a house, shooting right through there? They say it's an accident. It's not an accident. When you're carrying assault weapons and you're assaulting a house with it, that's not an accident. That's what you were planning to do. They have no regard for the people. It is just a complete attack on the African community, and the Uhuru movement is about standing up against that. So this is why, one of the reasons why the Uhuru movement, the African People's Socialist Party, is calling together Uhuru Freedom Summer from July 9th to August 9th. It's a summer project. People will be coming in here into St. Petersburg from all over the country, as well as many, many activities and activists from this local community as well, with the goal of building Black power into the hands of African people and use St. Petersburg as the city of African resistance, building economic and political institutions that become the basis for dual power. This is where the struggle is at. This is a revolutionary struggle. And in the face of a city that has blocked the African community from any economic life, this project will help build a black community convention to bring together Africans from throughout the city and different ages and interests to come together to build institutions such as a self-sustaining community garden, the Marcus Garvey Academy, a recording studio right here in the Uhuru House that would be an opportunity for young Africans to record their music and express their talents, and also to raise some resources, make some money. They're also continuing the program to put in a commercial kitchen here in at the Uhuru House as a business incubator for the community, for so many people want to do food, and they have to have a certified kitchen to be able to do that. There's also going to be a lot of work in the Burning Spear here, and there's going to be training and engineering work and different kinds of program training here on Uhuru Radio going on during this month. And North Americans, white people can be part of this. It
Come
is really, really going to be exciting.
Come to St. Pete.
Absolutely.
Get your ticket, gas up your car, and come to St. Pete.
There's food.
You just got to get here. We're going to put you up. We're going to feed you. the movement, the Uhuru movement, is going to make the struggle here in St. Pete. And it's really significant from the North American, from the Euro-American, also known as the white population, that we participate in this Freedom Summer. Just like people came down for the Mississippi Freedom Summer, from white people came down from all throughout the North to take a stand in solidarity with African people fighting for their rights, now's your opportunity to do that. And there's going to, in addition to building the institutions in, you know, supporting the building of these institutions that are happening in the African community, it's also going to be real campaign work, because the Uhuru movement and the leadership of the Uhuru movement, particularly African People's Socialist Party Chairman Omali Yeshitela, have come under attack in the recent period as the resistance is growing and as the reactionary shock jocks and the government understand the Uhuru movement to be the leadership of the African revolutionary struggle, African community struggle. The movement has come under attack, with assassination threats being made against Chairman Omali from these local shock jocks, and just slander against the movement. And we need to defend the movement, and we need to go out into the white community and let people know what the Uhuru movement is really about, because then we can win friends, because there's so many people in the white community here in St. Pete who do support the Uhuru movement, who could support the Uhuru movement if they understood what it's about. And it's our job to go out and talk to them. So we're going to be doing a lot of outreach into the white community, just like the Mississippi Freedom Summer called on the white students and what have you when they came down to do the voter registration and the freedom schools in the African community. The Mississippi Freedom Summer Project called on them to go and speak to the white people, go and talk to the white people about what is the real struggle, what is the stand, and they wouldn't do it. But we're going to do it now, so you need to come down.
Yes, I just really want to second what Sandy's saying and appreciate that. And I do want to also bring up something that Cephas Johnson said, and that is that it is Father's Day today, and we have to think about how many African children are growing up without a father, either because they were killed by the police or by the horizontal violence that this government imposes on the African community, or they're in prison today. And I mean, how many millions, really, literally millions of African children are without a father today because of this war against the African community? But also that as white people, as fathers, people, you know, fathers in the white community and mothers, you know, we have to think about what is the world that our children are going to grow up to see, to be part of. Yeah. Is it going to be something that is just sort of a last-ditch attempt to continue to drain the resources out of a population of the planet Earth and African people while they're struggling fiercely to bring this down? Or is it going to be something that can be in harmony, in solidarity, in unity with the majority of the people on the planet Earth in this struggle against white power, against imperialism? And I think so many of us want to be on the side of African people and humanity, and we want our children to grow up in a safe, secure world in which all human beings can live together to solve the problems that this vicious system has left after 500 years of just plunder and slaughter. So, you know, for this Father's Day, I want, you know, you to sign up and come to Uhuru Freedom Summer. Go to uhurusummerproject.org, Uhuru, U-H-U-R-U, summerproject.org, and sign up today, and we'll see you in a few weeks. And we want to encourage everybody to be part of this historic process. And we'll be back next week with Reparations in Action on uhururadio.com. Uhuru.
Well, you better listen, my sisters and brothers, because if you do, you can hear their voices still calling across the years. And they're all crying across the ocean, and they're crying across the land, and they will till we all come.